What's up, nerds, and welcome to the Nerd History Podcast, the newest addition to the Love Thy Nerd Podcast Network. The Nerd History Podcast exists to do what all nerds love the most, dive deep into the nostalgia of nerd culture that made us who we are. Each episode, we will spotlight one particular nerd history event from that week and take a deep dive into the fandom, the lore, the nerdy facts. I'm Radio Matt. I'm the Director of Content and Resources for the Love Thy Nerd. There's a rogue the in my script. Love Thy Nerd and station manager for LTN Radio. And with me today is a special guest and host of the Two Words podcast here on the LTN Podcast Network, John Berkey.
What's up, everybody? It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. It's a little weird because I am his co-host for the Two Words podcast, where he is usually in the driver's seat. It's weird being in the driver's seat now. Yeah. Because we're also going to be talking about wrestling today.
And I'm a pretty erratic driver.
We are the Nerd Historians, and today on the show, we are taking a look back at the history of WCW Monday Nitro, the flagship show of World Championship Wrestling, as we approach the 23rd anniversary of the final episode of Nitro.
Dang.
23 years.
Man.
That has been the constant realization each episode so far of the show is, golly, we are so much older than
this happened when we were young.
Let's take a quick look at WCW and give our thoughts here. So, John, I know you didn't really experience Nitro in real time, right?
Not as much. And it wasn't just because... I grew up in the very conservative, like, that wrestling wasn't like demonized or anything, but it was a non-issue because we didn't have cable. There was no wrestling in my house by default. It was nobody's, but I knew of it. I knew about it.
Right. There, a lot of it still permeated pop culture
at the
time.
Of course.
I mean, Hulk Hogan being probably the biggest one.
Yeah. Everybody knew, everyone knew who Hulk Hogan was. Everyone knew who Sting was.
And you've seen plenty of footage and documentaries of WCW in the years since, especially when it comes to the Monday Night Wars.
Yeah.
Right. The history of WCW actually goes back a long way, well before Ted Turner launched the show on TNT. But we will just focus on WCW Nitro's era today.
Yeah.
What are your overall impressions of the run of WCW Nitro?
What an incredible collection of ups and downs. I mean, that's really like extreme highs, very extreme lows. Mm-hmm. Because for every Hogan heel turn, you have Big Show getting thrown off of a crane and being killed and then showing up the next week.
I agree. There is some wacky business going on. I feel like, after it found its footing, which, Raw was the same way. It was cheesy and kind of campy. But after it found its footing, obviously, it crushed it for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 100%. And, for a year and a half, you're looking at this run of... I mean, it beat WWE in the ratings, WWF at the time, in the ratings for 83 weeks. I mean, that's historic.
Yeah, that's 83 ridiculous.
Weeks in a row. That's historic. And, they were able to do something different than what Monday Night Raw was doing and be successful. And I think that's what every other company that has come along that has tried to do it. It's like they try to do something different, but they don't land the plane. WCW kept on making the moves up until the end. And then it was like, boom, it just fell off.
I mean, I don't want to generalize because I'm sure there were some nuances here, but it feels like just looking back overall from 30,000 feet that the time where they were focused on actively competing with WWE to the point where they were calling them out on TV every week.
Yeah.
That was the time they were popular.
Oh, yeah.
And so it almost feels like WCW had to be connected to WWE in some way.
Yeah.
In order to be successful.
Yeah, I'd get that.
And I think at the time it really worked for them. But looking back on it, it almost seems kind of like a desperate move in some ways.
Yeah.
It's like, It's like, you know, it's like, get your own thing.
Because like at the end of it, you know, you look at the last little bit of run and we'll kind of talk about this a little bit more in a minute, I think. Yeah. But, you know, the final episode of Nitro looks nothing like the first episode.
Right.
Or, you know, the first few episodes. You know, they focused on what was really working. They found something that worked and they were able to really focus on it. Whereas a lot of times, you know, and we experience this in WWE, it's kind of like, well, if it's not working, it's y'all's fault. It's the audience that is the problem here.
You're not getting it.
You're not getting it. So let's go harder here in this. And it just doesn't, you know, whereas WCW, I mean, they found stuff that worked.
Yeah.
You know, and they didn't have to sell out, you know, giant stadiums and arenas to do so.
Yeah, I agree with that. So WCW Nitro for its entire existence went head to head with WWE Monday Night Raw or WWF Monday Night Raw at the time. Raw is war. How big were the Monday Night Wars for the industry at large?
Oh, they were huge because they pushed everything to be better. And that is the reason why nothing's getting better now. and, you know, competition breeds quality. And when you had two companies that were doing things at an extremely high level that had performers you cared about watching, that had stories you cared about hearing, you know, the competition, it was really, really good. And I think it was just important to get a lot of names out there that we probably wouldn't have had. I mean, I just don't know that we would have had Harlem Heat before without WCW. You know, we wouldn't have Booker T without WCW. You know, we probably would have had Flair.
Yeah.
I mean, we had Flair before, but you know, there was a lot that you don't have now because WWE realized we either need to step up or we're going to lose. And so, you know, that's where we got the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
WWF realized, hey, we've got to start pushing out more stuff that, you know, we got to have more than, hey, your dentist wrestles on the side. He's wrestling an astronaut this week on Raw. See how that goes.
A plumber faces a clown in the main event.
Exactly.
WWE Raw.
And, you know, I look at, you know, that was the thing is like when you look at WCW, there wasn't a lot of that.
Right.
It was, you know, like characters and that, you know, like, it was Canadians versus a boy band. Like that was, you know, which is somehow better.
Somehow just a little bit better. Yeah. I will say that, that era, I mean, we both gone back and watched some of the episodes of like WWE during that era. And you realize that, you know, with all the documentaries and stuff that they come out with, they highlight all the really good stuff. And there was a whole bunch of garbage that happened. But one of the things that I do miss about that era is that you really didn't want to miss an episode of Raw and then later SmackDown because titles did often change hands on TV. Nowadays, it's like, I technically don't have to watch Raw or SmackDown. I can just watch the pay-per-views, see the little 5-minute recap of everything that's happened over the last month.
And I'm good.
I'm caught up, and now I'll see the outcome. But like, because they were pushing each other so hard, it really felt like it was must-see TV every week because you didn't know what was going to happen. Now, eventually that would lean a little too far the other direction and titles were changing hands every week. And like, no, that's too much. Let's take it back a little bit.
Yeah.
But the fact that like you didn't know because it had happened enough that you didn't know if you were going to get that pay-per-view quality match, you know, on regular Monday night, you had to tune in.
And I think even more to that point, you didn't really want to miss pay-per-views either.
Right.
Because crazy stuff happened on pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. You know, now it's like, I don't have to watch every pay-per-view.
Right. Let's hit the big four, maybe five, the Money in the Bank.
And nothing happens in those pay-per-views either. I mean, you know, there are great matches. That's fine. But, like, there's no story being driven in those pay-per-views, in my opinion.
Anyway, yeah.
You know,
for me, right now.
Not in the same way, you know. Yeah.
I agree. Well, we're going to take a deeper dive into the history of WCW Monday Nitro in a bit. But now, as customary, it's time for a game. Each week, Deidre and I usually go head-to-head in a game to put our nerdy nostalgia knowledge to the test. Today, John, you're going to take Deidre's place.
All right.
We will ask each other five questions, all multiple choice. If we get the answer wrong, we have to guess again, with each wrong answer earning us an X. So fewest X's at the end of the round wins.
All right.
It's like golf here.
Okay.
Today, as we discuss a sport full of monsters among men, we're jumping into trivia about monsters among media and history.
So this isn't a wrestling
thing? It's not a wrestling thing at all.
Okay.
It usually isn't directly tied to the show.
Okay.
Another nerdy area. So let's do rock, paper, scissors. Just one round. See who answers first.
Okay.
Okay.
Is it
one,
rock,
two, three,
paper,
shoot.
Yeah. Okay. You always have to...
You always have to make the rules clear.
All right, ready?
One, two, three, shoot. All right. So I will answer first.
No, rock goes through paper.
Nothing beats rock.
Nothing beats... I mean, you ever thrown a rock at paper?
All right. So you ask the question, give me the options, and then I will choose.
So, Radio Matt, your first question. What mythological monster was said to be produced when a chicken egg was hatched under a toad or a serpent? Is it the Hydra, the Chimera, the Basilisk, or the Thorax?
This is going to be a lot harder than I thought it was going to be.
Is it?
I think I've heard of all of these, but I can only picture the Hydra, and that's mainly because of Captain America. I'll go with Basilisk. Whoa!
Hey, according to legend, yeah, that's amazing.
According to legend, a basilisk was produced when a chicken egg was hatched under a toad or a serpent. There were, according to legend, several species of this animal. One species burned up whenever they approached. A second were a kind of wandering Medusa's heads, and their look could cause instant horror, which was immediately followed by death. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. I thought that was just something Harry Potter made up.
Was it in the Harry Potter book?
Yeah, and a thorax I always thought was just as a body part.
I was thinking Thoraxus from Community.
Bow before Thoraxus.
All right. Well, good start for me.
All right.
Oh, you do five. So.
Oh, I got to do five.
You do
okay.
the five,
okay.
and then you do five.
Okay. I didn't know the rules. All right, your second question. In 1832, what monster did UK Representative B.H. Hudson claim to have seen in Nepal? Was it the Abominable Snowman, the Werewolf, the Vampire, or the Hydra? I'm pretty sure I know this one.
Nepal is the clue that I'm getting.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Abominable Snowman.
I would say that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
1832, living in Nepal, claimed to see the Abominable Snowman attack his servants. So not just seen it, but saw it attack people he knew.
Attacked.
Described the creature as a wild man covered in long, dark hair and had no tail. So Robin Williams.
I mean, yeah.
That's who. Robin Williams attacked his servant.
Pretty much. You know, there are people out there that think, like, the Bigfoot and the Yeti and all that, just aliens.
Just aliens?
They're aliens. That's their thought.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Number three. According to local legends, what large, nocturnal, red-haired monster roams the Amazon jungle of Brazil?
Pronounce any of these, John.
Is it? Oh, I got this. Is it? The Mokel Bemi?
Mbemi?
The Mapinguari,
yeah,
the thylacine, or the Chicoan peccary.
thylacine sounds like a drug to keep your thyroid in order.
Makes you poop less.
Okay. We're in pure guest territory.
Okay. So
I'm going to start with the Mokele Mbembe, because it's fun to say.
Yeah, aww. Got an X.
Thylacine. Oh, fart. Mapinguari. Hey! According to local legends, the Mapinguari, a large nocturnal red-haired monster with a disorienting stench, roams the Amazon jungle of Brazil. Locals describe the Mapinguari as standing about 2 meters tall while on its hind legs. Interesting, its feet are turned backwards and is reportedly capable of ripping apart palm trees with its large claws.
My goodness.
All right, two more.
The Mokele Mbembe looks like a Loch Ness monster.
It does.
That's a little bit like a Loch Ness monster. All right. Number four, what famous monster has an NHL team named after it? Is it A, the Chupacabra, the Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, or the Jersey Devil?
Pass. am I remembering Seinfeld correctly?
You might be, I think, probably.
Where Patrick Warburton is dressed up as a devil. Was it for a hockey game? Was it the New Jersey Devils?
I mean, I'm not going to give you the answer.
That's my guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where he's like, does it like a nun on a bus or something?
Yeah.
Like, the Devils!
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, then it's New Jersey Devils. Yeah, okay. I got that one. That was luck, Brett. Or
yeah.
That was pure fortune.
But there's actually two now.
What's the
because
other one?
Seattle has a new team called the Seattle Kraken.
Hey!
So.
That's cool. I bet their logo's nice. I want to see
it. It's not bad.
Yeah. I've seen the Jersey Devils logo, and I don't really care for it. All right, last one.
All right, number five. What famous monster did Mary Shelley create? This is not fair. What famous monster did Mary Shelley create in the summer of 1816 while visiting the poet Lord Byron at his villa in Switzerland? Was it the Abominable Snowman? Was it Frankenstein? Was it Dracula? Or was it Mr. Hyde?
See, you say it's not fair, and I'm looking for clues, and I have no idea. Oh.
My wife's an English teacher, so...
Oh, okay. Mary Shelley. It sounds familiar, but so do all of these monsters, so...
Didn't Mary Shelley write Where the Sidewalk Ends?
Sure.
No, I don't think
I feel like it's either Mr. Hyde or Frankenstein. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. I'll say Frankenstein. Ooh, okay. So
I mean, she didn't create Frankenstein, though. I mean, unless you look at Frankenstein as the monster, because it's Frankenstein's monster.
You're correct.
The monster's name was Fred.
You're right. You're right. Okay, so I got just two.
Two X's.
John, I did far better than I should have, I'm going to be honest.
Fair enough.
Good luck. Here you go. What mythological creature was once a beautiful maiden until she was changed into a snake-like monster with six heads by the sorceress Circe? Charybdis?
That's hard.
Scylla? Nope, Scylla. Scylla? Cerberus, I know that one, and Kraken. Yeah.
So it's not Cerberus and Kraken.
So Charybdis, and Scylla, yeah. Scylla, maybe? Scylla?
I'm going to go with Scylla?
Scylla?
I'm just going to go...
Correct!
Hey!
Scylla was once a beautiful maiden. She lived in a cave up high on a cliff from where she was known to thrust forth her long necks. She had six heads, and in each of her mouths seized one of the crew of every vessel passing within reach. Wow. According to legend, she murdered six of the companions of Ulysses.
Hey.
Hey. All right.
Didn't know that.
Next up, what monster movie resulted from famed Mexican cinematographer Gabriel Figueroa's tales of a legendary humanoid creature that supposedly lived in South America. It came from outer space. Legend of the Chupacabra. Creature from the Black Lagoon, or Los Bulbos. I feel like I know this one.
Well, so my first thought was the legend of the Chupacabra, but the Chupacabra is like a dog.
Yeah, it's not a humanoid creature, I'll give you that.
And Los Bulbos is fun to say.
It is.
I'm going to go with Creature from the Black Lagoon because I know that it was a humanoid
right.
kind of thing.
Ding, ding.
Yes! Well, I thought it was. I did it!
Creature is considered by many critics to be Universal's last great classic monster, and it spawned several sequels, including Revenge of the Creature and The Creature Walks Among Us.
That movie was, fun fact about that movie, it was filmed, a lot of the lake scenes were filmed at Juniper Springs, or Silver Springs in Florida.
Yeah.
And you can go do glass bottom boat tours, and they also filmed the Tarzan series, the black and white Tarzan series there, and they left a whole bunch of statues, like Greek god statues down there, and they just like left them. They were like, all right, we're out. Okay. They also left like a herd of capuchin monkeys. Wow. They were just like, we're out. Deal with these monkeys.
That's crazy. All right. You're doing well, man.
All right.
Two clean.
Two for two.
Two clean. All right. Next up. In Greek mythology, the story of the Lycan serves as one of the earliest examples of what kind of monster? Cyclops, zombie, vampire, or werewolf?
Well, if you're gonna say it that way, I'm gonna probably go with werewolf.
Correct.
Because
that is like
Cyclops was the only other Greek mythology
right
thing.
According to one version of the story, Lycan was transformed into a wolf as punishment for eating human flesh. According to legend, what three-headed monster was said to guard the entrance to Hades? So this one is a fake. Cerberus, Typhon, Echidna, Knuckles, or Minotaur? Echidna.
Elba. I'm going to go with Cerberus.
Yeah.
I wanted to have a bulldog named Cerberus one time.
Are you going to beat me in my own game with your first appearance?
I think so.
The Legend of Dracula. Your last one. Sorry, the Dracula legend. Is believed to be based on what historical figure? Giles de Reyes, Vlad Tepes, Sigismund of Hungary, or Wacław the Third?
So I'm going to go with Vlad Tepes, also known as Vlad the Impaler.
You're right. Gosh darn it, John.
Dang, I'm so good at this.
Yeah, Deidre's going to be upset too because it took her 10 episodes to beat me in a game.
My problem is that I'm dumb as a bag of hammers, but I remember everything that's ever been said to me. So
you can't come up with it off the spot, but if you're asked about it, like, you know it.
Hey.
Man, that's good. All right, well, two to zip.
I'm a winner.
You win. That does it for our game. Let's take a trip back to 2001.
In the year 2001.
Before we dive deep into the history of WCW Monday Nitro, John, share some nerdy facts about the show.
Of course. Nitro was known for its celebrity appearances, ranging from Dennis Rodman and Carl Malone participating in matches to Jay Leno and even the band Kiss performing live. These appearances were part of WCW's strategy to mainstream professional wrestling. One of Nitro's most notable achievements was its streak of beating WWE Raw in the weekly TV ratings for 83 consecutive weeks from 1996 to 1998. This period is often considered the peak of WCW's success. Nitro differentiated itself from its competition by airing live each week, a bold move that allowed for spontaneous moments and real-time surprises. This live format heightened the sense of unpredictability and excitement around the show.
which was very different from WWF Raw.
Oh, yeah.
Which we'll talk about here in a minute, how WCW utilized that to their advantage. But in September of 1995, the landscape of professional wrestling underwent a seismic shift with the premiere of WCW Monday Nitro on TNT. Under the leadership of Eric Bischoff, WCW sought to challenge the dominance of WWF's Monday Night Raw, igniting the infamous Monday Night Wars. Monday Nitro was innovative, daring, unpredictable, changing the course of sports entertainment. The first episode of Nitro, broadcast live from the Mall of America, was the declaration of war on the status quo. Lex Luger's surprise appearance, having wrestled for WWE just days before, was like the first of many shots across the bow.
Several times that being done, yeah.
Many shocks are considered or characterized Nitro's approach to wrestling entertainment. Despite signing Hulk Hogan as a launch face of the company, like he was in the press junkets and everything before the launch of the show, it really felt like the Lex Luger thing was really the first blood drawn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in the first episode, Lex Luger comes out and interrupts a match while Hulk Hogan is doing advertisements for Pasta Mania. And that's not a joke.
Yeah.
That's
true.
They just kept cutting to him that Pasta Mania was a restaurant in the Mall of America. And that was what he did in the first episode. So
yeah. So as we talked about earlier, facing off against WWE was kind of a key component for WCW for years, especially when Eric Bischoff was in charge. And back then it felt edgy, and today it kind of looks a little sleazy. And
But what doesn't?
True. But one of the ways that it was a little sleazy was the fact that they would utilize the fact that they were live and WWE was not by flat out giving results to what was going on over in WWE.
Hey.
So you didn't have to change the channel. Because that was one of the kind of stalwarts of the time, is that everybody who really loved wrestling but couldn't choose which side to stick with would be flipping back and forth. Every time a commercial came on one, they'd flip to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd miss a little bit here and there, but you'd still be catching the gist of it all night. And WCW utilized that fact to be like, hey, you don't need to change channel at all. Here's what's going to happen over there. Big Boss Man's going to retain the Intercontinental Championship. Mm-hmm. Don't move.
Yeah.
Stay here. We got this coming up. It was a smart move, but
until it backfired.
Yeah. Very, very big backfire when it was Mick Foley, right?
Yep.
They spoiled that Mick Foley was going to win, Mankind was going to win the World Heavyweight Championship title, which is something that everyone on earth who loved wrestling wanted to see.
Oh, yeah.
And so even that they had the results spoiled for them, they're like, what? Click, 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 away. And it was great. It was a great moment.
Yeah. The best part of that whole thing is they say that, and then one of the commentators goes, well, that's going to put butts in seats. Like, it very much did. It very much does.
At least changed a lot of channels. So one of the most pivotal moments in Nitro's history, perhaps wrestling as a whole, was the formation of the New World Order, the NWO,
in
1996. This was the defection of Scott Hall and Kevin Nash from WWE to WCW, followed by Hulk Hogan's shocking heel turn. And this created a storyline that kind of blurred the lines between fiction and reality, because they were played off as if they actually were coming from WWF to invade WCW.
Mm-hmm.
And for a few weeks, because back then this kind of stuff wasn't normal.
Mm-hmm.
People were like, is that really what's happening? How are they getting away with this?
Oh, yeah.
But keen-eyed fans noticed that they didn't use their ring names. They didn't use Razor Ramon. Mm-hmm. They didn't use Diesel. And eventually it started to become clear, no, they're just working for WCW now. And so they started the NWO thing. And it was, of course, brilliant move in my mind to make Mr. Hulk Hogan here the third man to create NWO, because he was also a WWF guy.
Hogan is the third man.
Almost didn't happen, but it was good. It was about to be Sting, but it wasn't. Thanks. Let me say,
there was also Dave Meltzer at the time was apparently convinced it was going to be Mabel. That Mabel was the third man. It's like he was apparently he was absolutely convinced.
That would have killed the whole momentum right there. Can't share the ring with anybody. The NWO storyline propelled Nitro to the forefront of professional wrestling, with its ratings surpassing Raw for 83 consecutive weeks. Like we said, this era was marked by innovative storylines, significant celebrity appearances, and roster that mixed established legends with rising stars. For a long time, they did have a good reputation of pushing new talent, especially like cruiserweight talent, though that would falter a bit.
Yeah.
As years went on, NWO itself would also falter a bit as years went on, as it just got too big, too stale.
Yeah.
It got to the point where literally half the roster was on one NWO team or another.
Yeah.
There was normal NWO, there was NWO Wolfpack, there was LWO, there was so many WOs going on.
It was the Blue World Order.
Blue World Order was still in
WWF. Was it WWF?
That was Stevie Richards, Blue Meanie. Yeah. Blue World Order.
I don't care. I it was great.
Later to become the Job Squad. Or was Job Squad first? No, I don't remember.
I don't remember.
They're about the same time. But yeah, it was a great idea. It just got done to death.
Oh, yeah.
Got done to death. It was killing creativity. It was nice when it went away. And weird when it was brought back in WWF, but or WWE, but that's okay. Goldberg's streak was another defining moment. His meteoric rise, undefeated streak, became a central storyline, culminating in a victory over Hollywood Hulk Hogan for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship at the Georgia Dome in front of 40,000 fans. This event epitomized Nitro's ability to create larger-than-life moments that captivated audiences worldwide. But, it was a lie. 172-0, I think, is what they ended at.
I think so, yeah.
Which, no. He wrestled, I think, 50 matches at most. Like, there wasn't anywhere near that.
Oh, yeah, because adding the number. Yeah, because every single one. And I guess you go like, oh, well, it was, you know, it was like live shows or whatever. Yeah. But no. Even with live shows, man, like every week it was 20 more.
Yeah. He wasn't a great wrestler, and nobody knew that right away.
Yeah,
because they protected him and protected the storyline.
Yeah,
and so he really only had to like come out, hit a couple moves, and bounce. And so when he finally lost, he like immediately became less of a commodity.
Oh yeah,
like he was still a big name. People liked him a lot. I remember he was one of the people that were being chanted for Vince to bring over to WWE.
Oh, yeah,
but still. It was the shine was off the apple.
Oh, yeah.
At that point.
Well, and I think you're exactly right, because you had, you know, everybody goes, oh, he only came out and wrestled for like 2 minutes. It's like, that's all he needed to.
Yeah. He was.
You didn't want to watch him for more than 2 minutes. You didn't need to watch him for 2 minutes. Why put a guy on air for 15 minutes when all you need is two? Mm-hmm. It makes sense.
I mean, it was the Brock Lesnar move back then.
Oh, yeah.
Which was good. But despite all of its success, Nitro's fortunes began to wane toward the end of the 1990s. Creative missteps, management turmoil, and the failure to build new stars contributed to a decline in ratings and relevance. WWE's resurgence, led by the Attitude Era, saw Raw regain and ultimately maintain its position as the premier wrestling show. And in 2001, AOL Time Warner, looking to divest from the wrestling business, sold WCW to WWE, making it the end of Nitro and the Monday Night Wars. Now, during this time, most of this time, the last couple years, it was Vince Russo who was actually in charge of writing, of creativity and development, and also on the camera a lot, like Eric Bischoff had been. And there was a little overlap. They were both on for a while, kind of sharing power, but they didn't quite get along. Vince Russo was actually fairly instrumental in helping the Attitude Era launch over at WWE. But he didn't like the extra pressure at the time, especially as they were gearing up to launch SmackDown on Thursday nights. He didn't want all that pressure. he took a bigger contract at WCW and made a whole lot of money over there, despite that they were also launching their Thursday night program, Thunder. But there is actually a theory, because it was bad. It was so bad. It was when we had all the
Russo booking was rough.
Terrible matches. This is when the title started changing hands like every week. Like
crash booking, is what he called it.
Yeah, it was nuts. There is a active fan theory out there that Vince Russo was intentionally planted by Vince McMahon in WCW to tank it.
I don't know.
That Vince deliberately said, look, they're going to grab you because they want you. If we say that you quit, they're going to offer you a contract. You take it. You run with it. You demand head of creative. They'll give it to you because that's what they had been doing with everybody that left WWE. They'd be grabbing, scooping them up, icing them away.
I don't know about that.
No, I don't believe it either, but that would be some serious espionage.
Because Vince Russo has doubled down.
Yeah. Vince Russo to this day still believes that everything he did was great.
Oh, yeah. 1,000%. He's like, I don't know, bro. It's just bro a lot.
I'm still talking about it.
We're here. No press is bad press.
All right, so let's get to the final Nitro, which was a surreal thing. I did experience this in real time, the final Nitro and the Raw that was happening at the same time. On March 26, 2001, WCW Monday Nitro aired for the last time, marking the end of an era in professional wrestling. The final episode was a night of reflection, a celebration, a couple unexpected turns, encapsulating the unpredictable spirit that had defined Nitro over the years. And in a shocking move that symbolized the culmination of the Monday Night Wars, Vince McMahon himself appeared on Nitro at the beginning of the show, saying, "What do you know? You're watching Vince McMahon on TNT, on WCW. Well, how could that happen?" Vince McMahon appeared to announce that WWF had purchased WCW, and this blended the lines between reality and storyline in a manner only professional wrestling could. We'll get to how that went in a minute. The final Nitro was held in Panama City Beach, Florida. It was kind of weird because it wasn't indoors. And so the last episode also had just a different feeling because it was like an outdoor event.
Yes, but that was also one of the things that visually draws me back to WCW because they did several outdoor
events. They would do it occasionally, but yeah, it didn't have the same feel as a normal weekly
show. Yeah, let's put it that way.
The crowd noise is clearly different in an outdoor show.
Yeah.
And so it was also kind of hard to gauge the crowd at all different points. I feel like the crowd involvement would have sounded a lot louder had they been in a stadium at the time. Mm-hmm. But it was a night like filled with emotion for wrestlers, for employees. You heard the announcement team the entire night just saying, "We don't know what's going on. We don't know what's going to happen next. Will we be here? Will we have jobs? Will all these wrestlers have jobs?" No one really knows. The show featured a mix of nostalgia and fresh twists, including a title unification match between WCW World Heavyweight Champion Scott Steiner and WCW United States Heavyweight Champion Booker T, with Booker T emerging as the victor and becoming the final WCW World Heavyweight Champion. You watched the show, right? We watched it in preparation for this.
I did. And I've watched it a couple of times.
Yeah.
What
did you think of that match? It was kind of early in the show.
Yeah. And I mean, it was a great match. And honestly, you know, that was peak Steiner, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was so much better than he was before that and he was after that. I mean, that was really, those few months leading up to that, I mean, they were really good.
Mm-hmm.
And Booker T was great. He did a promo, you know, saying like, "Hey, you know, I'm ready to show anybody that I'm the best and that I can hang with everybody," and da da da. I think it was great. No, I thought the match was a good match.
And he was arguably one of the largest names that actually came over to WWF pretty much immediately.
Right away, yeah.
Yeah.
Most
of the bigger talent that are getting paid $1 billion just wrote out their guaranteed contracts and didn't come for a while.
Yeah. And, you know, you watch it, and there's really only a couple of matches I actually care about in this whole card.
You're right, yeah.
And this is the one of them.
About all of them, yeah.
Yeah.
It was billed as the Night of Champions. They had two championships in that one match, so that covered those two. Then they had the Cruiserweight title match. They had a Cruiserweight tag team title match also on the line. Quite a few notable names. I know Rey Mysterio was in there.
An unmasked Rey Mysterio. Unmasked, so was it really weird, Rey Mysterio?
Weird. It's still weird to see him without his mask on.
And he had these weird devil horns in his hair. Yeah. I was...
not feeling
it. No, thank you. No, thank you.
But the final match, after Vince had gotten on that first time, Ric Flair came out in his suit and tie, all on fire.
Yeah.
And I hear Vince McMahon say that he's going to hold WCW in the palm of his hand. Yeah, just...
Yeah.
He had already been screaming that day, you could tell, because his voice kept going out when he was talking. But he wanted to end the night on a banger note, and so he challenged Sting to the final match of the main event of that night, which Sting later accepted. Sting had been gone for... I'd say almost 5 months at this point.
Okay.
He had not been on TV, but he made that clear when he accepted the challenge later on. He said, but I wouldn't miss this final night, you know, whatever. And so they had been on the card together on the very first Nitro.
Yeah, they were the first Nitro match.
Were they the first match?
I think they were.
I didn't know if they were the first match, but I do know they were on that first card. And so that's kind of how... Ric Flair framed it as like, we started this thing, let's end this thing, so it makes sense if that's the first one. And that match, I mean, it wasn't a 5-star pay-per-view worthy match.
It wasn't a barn burner.
But it was a good match to end on.
Yeah.
It was a solid note. It was a good hit of nostalgia.
I'm somehow less comfortable with Ric Flair wrestling in a shirt than I am without him wearing a shirt.
Which is something
I'm pretty uncomfortable.
Because I just had to make an image for this week is also the final match of Ric Flair in WWE.
Okay.
I just had to find an image of that with him versus Shawn Michaels. And just in every image I found, it's like somebody submerged a Christmas ham for 2 weeks and
Kool-Aid.
It. It was bad, but yeah, it was weird to see him with the shirt on, but it was a decent match. And so this was right before cutting to Vince McMahon live from Raw.
Yeah.
Now Raw was offset by an hour. So Vince actually came out at the tail end of the first hour of Raw, but the WCW feed basically just completely cut to Vince here. Vince had been introduced and come out to the ring, and then was told, "Hey, we're not on yet for WCW Nitro."
So he just started walking back.
He had to pretend like that wasn't a good enough entrance, and so he walked back and said, "Do it again," to Lillian Garcia. Lillian Garcia, you could see, is visibly like, "What's going on?" Okay,
who is wearing a silk robe?
Yeah, it was very strange. Anyway, he came back down, went through this whole thing, made it a storyline.
Yeah.
So in reality, it was already purchased several days ago. Contract's already signed. It was done.
Yeah.
He made a storyline saying that there's like a handshake agreement at this point. It's already been signed by WCW executives. He just has to sign it, and he's not going to sign it until that Sunday, which was WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
And he would only sign it if billionaire Ted Turner came down and hand-delivered me the contract in the ring at WrestleMania, making this big, grandiose ego move. That's when, for WrestleMania, he had already been in a match set up with his son. With his son, Shane McMahon, and they were going to have a match together. And so Shane's music hits. We assume he's coming out of the ring. He does not. He walks out live at Panama City Beach, walks into the WCW Nitro ring, and claims that because Vince dragged his heels, he swooped in and says, "The contract's signed, the deal is done." And it does say McMahon, but it says Shane McMahon.
Yeah.
And so now we start a whole storyline of WCW invading and all this kind of stuff, mm-hmm. with Shane McMahon at the helm of WCW, Vince at the helm of WWE. And that moment was a geek out moment for everybody in the fandom at all. It's like, how could we have ever seen this coming? Who ever thought that this would happen? And even if you didn't believe, which most of us, I'm assumed, I didn't. I don't know if other people did, that Shane McMahon actually is the one that bought it, and you thought maybe they'd have rival promotions. You still thought that this is amazing, and this could be really cool. But it, you also had that sense of dread of, but are we going to get all of our WCW superstars, or are they just done? And that's kind of what happened.
Didn't get
all the big superstars right away.
Well, and it was a way. I mean, that whole promo was a way for Vince McMahon just to talk about himself and to be weird, and you know, and he delivered some line about, you know, oh, I'm gonna have my partner Trish Stratus come down and wheel my wife Linda McMahon. And you're like, this is a crazy person.
It was she was kayfabe paralyzed, something
like that. She
couldn't stand or talk.
I don't know.
Like catatonic.
Yeah,
and then she got up in the middle of the ring during the match at WrestleMania and kicked Vince.
Wrestling was just weird, and we loved it. But yeah, it was a good promo, and it really, you know, set the stage for the Invasion storyline. The problem is they dropped the ball in the Invasion storyline.
Oh, yeah,
so
it went so.
I mean, all of this for nothing, you know, because the Invasion storyline only works if you bring in the WCW talent, and unfortunately the only WCW talent you had at the time was Booker T and like Rob Van Dam or something. I mean, like
most of the mid card.
Yeah, a lot of mid card. Everybody's going, who is? I mean, like
few of the main eventers.
Was like Billy Kidman.
Kidman. He was one of the cruiserweights too. Yeah,
that Invasion storyline really only would have worked if you had gotten Hogan and Flair and Sting.
Yeah, so there were two failed attempts at saving WCW here. The first one was Eric Bischoff had secured money, had been in kind of a handshake agreement situation already with AOL Time Warner to purchase WCW. All the assets, all the contracts, all the library. But part of the deal was he still needed that time slot. He still needed TV time. And eventually they decided, we're not going to give it to you. And this was after he had already assumed the deal was pretty much all but done, all but signed. He was on the beach reclining when he got the phone call saying, deal's off, deal's done.
Yeah.
And they're like, blah, what happened?
Yeah, because they were going to shut down for like 2 months and then bring it back.
Yeah, real tool and come back. And so that didn't happen. And so it was like thunder, the thunder before Nitro. Booker T announces that Eric Bischoff is on the phone, and you hear Eric talking over the phone in the stadium saying, it's very possible that this next Monday night's going to be the last Monday night.
Yeah. So, no, that was the Nitro.
Was it the Nitro before?
Because I watched the Nitro before in preparation for this as well. And because, in all honesty, the last episode of WCW Nitro was really WWF Nitro.
Right.
Because they had come in and rewritten the show that Sunday night. So, really, the second to last episode was really the last WCW Nitro. And Eric Bischoff's phoning in. Eric Bischoff wasn't on the last two episodes of WCW Nitro. And that, to me, I'm about to go on a rant.
Do it.
Okay. That, to me, is really when you watch those last few episodes, you're like, oh, it's no wonder. Because this isn't the company. This isn't WCW to me. When I think about WCW, I think Hulk Hogan. I think Kevin Nash. I think, Eddie Guerrero. I think Chris Benoit. I think Dusty Rhodes. I think DDP. Not a single one of them was on the last two episodes of Nitro, except DDP had like a pre-filmed promo where he was just like, thanks. And then that was it. The branding had turned really off. I mean, that WCW logo at the end was hideous.
I did not like the all pointy. pointy nose.
It looked like a butterfly. It just wasn't, you know, when you look at that WCW versus the WCW that everybody thinks about, they're not the same thing. So it's no wonder that company went down. And when you look at the last episode of Nitro, you know, you have Booker T and Steiner, and then you have Sting and Flair. Then the rest of it's like, you know, what was that? It was like Three Count versus Billy Kidman and Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
When you look at the Monday Night Raw card for that night, I mean, it was like Edge and Christian and Kurt Angle versus was like, I can't remember who the other three. What it was, Chris Benoit and two other guys. I mean, it was like big name guys. The main event of that was Stone Cold and The Rock in a tag match against the Ministry of Darkness.
That's right.
Or the Brothers of Destruction. Yeah. Like, it's pretty obvious.
When
you look at it, there's really not a question of why this went downhill.
Yeah, I agree. It just fell apart by the end. And so you're right that the final episode was really WWF Nitro. And because of that, we didn't really get what most final episodes would. We didn't really get a full-on, like, celebration look back or anything like that. The only nostalgia we had was pulling out the, you know, the first match from Nitro, making it the last match from Nitro. But you would normally have time to, you know, get together big, long,
like a package,
5-minute package of you know, the biggest hits of WCW and things like that. And we didn't get any of that, and that never really came to fruition. We've had moments where WWE has looked back on WCW because now we own, you know, it owns all I'm a part of it. It owns all the library, but the fact is, it kind of ended with a whimper, and that's sad because it was the catalyst for a lot of the big changes that we still see today and still enjoy. But basically the greatest era in wrestling, you know, without WCW, would we still be doing Honky Tonk Man versus Brother Love? I don't know. But the legacy kind of faded out, which was kind of a bummer. But all in all, overall, WCW Nitro was a positive force and did a lot of cool things. WWE stole a lot of good ideas from WCW over the years as well.
Oh, yeah.
And vice versa. But it changed things for the better. And so we're grateful for it. We went to...
It could have gone either way, though.
True.
I mean, when WCW was in its heyday, like, you put WCW in its prime against WWF in its prime, it really could have gone either way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It really could have.
I agree. We did take a look back at some of the behind-the-scenes history here of WCW Monday Nitro. There's a lot more to the lore. You know, it was a good solid 7 years, I think, seasons that they had. But we went to ask a specific question to our LTN Discord and Facebook. We only got a couple answers because mainly... usually the poll is up for several days, and John and I are recording about 4 days in advance of when Deidre and I usually record, so we don't only have a couple answers today.
Fun.
But we asked the question, what was your favorite thing about WCW? We framed it towards people that grew up in the 90s and loved wrestling then, and so we got two answers here. That's How I Roll over on Discord said 100% Crow Sting.
Yeah,
I was a huge fan of like the opening movie thing that he does, seeing him with his face paint coming down from the rafters with his signature trench coat and black baseball bat was incredible. And he also loved the Crow, the movie, The Crow. So that made him love it even more.
Which good for you, because they're remaking it with Bill Skarsgård.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's cool. But yes, the transition from the kind of all-American surfer Sting to Crow Sting was a big deal. And just watching Sting's transformations kind of through every promotion that he's been a part of, it's pretty cool. A lot of people didn't care for it, but I enjoyed Joker Sting over in TNA.
You know,
it was weird, but I liked it.
It served its purpose, you know.
But it is that iconic Crow Sting that... really, like, strikes the fear in the hearts of people. Like when he came over to WWE for his very brief run where he had all but four matches.
Yeah. And he got injured in all four.
Two of which were on the same night. It was still like, yeah, you get the chills. Sing, when he was, I think it was that night when he was in the, it was supposed to be Seth Rollins receiving his statue.
Yeah.
To go in the WWE headquarters.
Sting under
it. They lift the thing and Sting's under it.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
It felt great. Goosebumps. Rogar said, I didn't really watch WCW, so he only has a handful of things to go off of, but he's going to say the Judy Bagwell on a forklift match.
I mean, but why don't we do that every night? I mean, that's a great, yeah.
Well, that's the era of Vince Russo, man. Judy Everything's Bagwell. On a pole. Everything's... Oh, man.
I had forgotten it's about rough. Judy Bagwell on a pole.
It's rough stuff back
yeah. then. Yeah. Yeah. It's. But that was, yeah, and that was, again, that was that whole, you know, crash booking or whatever. It's like, this isn't, what are we doing?
Right. What's happening?
You know.
How is this pushing a storyline?
I know. Yeah. No. It didn't. For me, probably, I mean... There's no better moment in wrestling, in my personal opinion, than Kevin Nash lawn darting Rey Mysterio into the side of a trailer. I don't think, not just the act of it, but like the way Rey Mysterio just hit and fell. Yeah, no, fantastic. I thought cruiserweights meant something
yeah.
in WCW. And when we've talked about that before, they were so much better in WCW. If I had to pick my favorite moment, I think Hogan is the third man.
I was going to say the same thing.
Is the best moment. Just all the trash coming in and, you know, the amount of heat that really brought. And, yeah, and it was just great. And in my personal opinion, I'll take NWO. I'll take Hollywood Hulk Hogan over
the Real American.
Real American every time.
What about when he was that? Masked American superhero figure.
He was like a luchador. I don't remember what he was. Yeah.
Wasn't it Vince McMahon trying to say, I know it's you, Hogan. They just couldn't. He would never. But he would still do the same.
Yeah. I loved in that promo right after the last Nitro, Vince McMahon goes, you want to bring over Hulk Hogan so he can do this stupid things with his hands? What is this?
Oh man, back when we could like Vince McMahon.
Yeah. I watched that. I also watched those intercut where he's sitting next to Trish Stratus.
Yeah.
And I'm like, when is Trish Stratus going to come down? Like, when is this?
Mm-hmm.
When do I not want to hear it?
Yeah. Let's not get into that.
That's right now.
Let's save that for two words. But yeah, they did cut to him as like little backstage segments throughout Nitro.
Yeah.
Which I don't think were actually on Raw. Like he was cutting different promos for each. Because on Raw, you would have him looking at screens of WWE happening right then. And then it was like supposed to be Nitro live, but it was Jeff Jarrett and he wasn't on the show.
Yeah.
And he's like, should I keep Jeff Jarrett? You know, that kind of stuff.
Look, yeah.
Like whatever. They had William Regal come in
yeah.
one of those and say, I don't know if you want to do this, and talking down mm-hmm. to WCW. And then you had Tony Schiavone go on and say, we had to carry your stupid, you know, butt through this company, Steve Regal.
Steve.
That was the only time I heard Tony Schiavone like do a like an anti-WWE moment at
yeah.
that point.
Any color commentary? Yeah.
Well, what did you think of WCW? Whose side were you on in the Monday Night Wars? We want to know. Tell us on the socials at Nerd History LTN. Subscribe to the Nerd History Podcast via the Love Thy Nerd YouTube channel. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. And find us on lovethynerd.com/nerdhistorypod. We also have our daily Today in Nerd History short and article that comes out every day at lovethynerd.com/nerdhistory with photos and nerdy facts. Oh, gosh. Did you hear that? Man, that sound means it's time for Today in Nerd Future.
That's so
get Deidre with it every week, too. What is the future of WCW? Well, clearly nothing. WCW was bought. It was run like a click for a while after it was brought back, but it has been fully enveloped now. I think the only thing that still carries on in the WWE left over from WCW is the United States Championship. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Is it the same United States Championship?
I think so.
They're unified. Maybe not.
I mean, they brought over the belt, and it was almost identical to the WCW belt. Well, yeah. Not the original WCW belt, but like an older version of it.
Yeah.
But still, I'm pretty sure that's the
only... But yeah, United States Championship would be the... Yeah.
The new World Heavyweight Championship has a big gold kind of esque design, but it's not the same title. Yeah.
It's not. Not...
Yeah.
Not 20 pounds of gold.
Yeah. And, of course, Booker T still lives on.
He's still alive, yes.
As a commentator. But the spirit of WCW still lives on in the first major promotion that has become a competitor for WWE since the fall of WCW. That is All Elite Wrestling, AEW. And it kind of felt very similar at the beginning. Lots of promotional house shows and pay-per-views leading up to the launch of this new show. Instead of Hogan, we had Chris Jericho as the big legacy pull from WWE there at the big announcements and the press conferences. Instead of Lex Luger, we had Jon Moxley being the first big WWE snag on the first episode of AEW Dynamite. They went head-to-head with WWE NXT for a good while before NXT moved to Tuesdays, but it was called the Wednesday Night War for a while, which was fun. And currently, there are massive amounts of former WWE wrestlers on the AEW roster, and WWE has pulled over several AEW stars as well. One of the bigger ones, instead of Chris Jericho being pulled over, WWE brought back Cody Rhodes, who is on track to... Gosh darn it, better.
He better.
Be the world WWE champion.
I will riot. I will riot.
At WrestleMania this year. And it airs weekly on the same channel WCW is on, TNT, and its secondary program, Rampage, airs on TBS, just like Thunder did back for WCW. So will AEW find the same fate as WCW?
I think so.
You think so?
I've thought this for a long time. Because this could just be unfounded claims, but I view Tony Khan as an Eric Bischoff who did not learn his lesson.
Mm.
I see it that way. I don't think their booking is as great. I think their talent's
amazing.
Off the wall.
Yeah, they got nothing but talent over there.
And the thing that's really saving them is they're having 5-star matches very consistently. Mm-hmm. Whether Meltzer will admit it or not, but I don't know. It scaled very fast.
It did.
I mean, it went very, very fast because it went from, hey, there are these couple of guys from New Japan, and Cody Rhodes, they're putting on a wrestling event.
Right. They were putting on a full indie pay-per-view.
Yeah. And then suddenly like Chris Jericho was there. And then next thing you know, they've hired, they've got, Chris Jericho and Jon Moxley, they've got pay-per-views lined up. They've got TV deals. They've got multiple TV deals. They've got the Big Show coming in. They got Mark Henry they've stolen from over there.
Daniel Bryan.
And
CM Punk comes back to wrestling in AEW. Yeah,
it all scaled very, very fast. And so I don't know. Maybe I don't watch All Elite enough, but I don't know if I get it. Just in terms of like, I just don't know how things are run. I don't see how this is, how there's a lot of longevity here.
Yeah. But, I mean, you and I, for the Two Words podcast, we go through a lot of those news and rumors and things that go on. And it's been a while now that we've heard backstage at AEW is not not consistently happy.
They ain't super happy.
Like they're constantly upset about booking, constantly worried that it's just going to be buried under the same 10 people doing everything.
Shine is off the apple for AEW.
But we're not in a place yet with AEW where their booking is wacky.
Yeah.
Which I think that was the real killer with WCW, is that once the booking just got nuts, that, you know, there was no coming back from it. As you said, the matches are saving it right now because the booking, the storylines are going really, really well. But it's more like the running of the company is a bit questionable. And Tony Khan is more like Eric Bischoff if he needed medication. Like he's...
Well, and that's true.
Because Eric Bischoff is a very charismatic dude. Like, he came out, he commanded the room. Tony Khan feels like the guy who got handed the keys to a wrestling promotion who always worked in the back.
Hey, guys.
Yeah. I got a big announcement. Dude came out at a press conference wearing that wacky wig and sunglasses at one time. I'm like, what's this guy's problem? It wasn't, hey, that dude looks cool and looks like he doesn't care what people think about him. It was like, you need to care what people think about you.
Should you start are running caring this program. A little bit. Yeah, and I don't know. We could talk about AEW.
We could.
You know, we could do a whole nother show about AEW. But, you know, to me, AEW, it's almost like they look at WCW and go, well, we could do that.
Yeah.
And we could make it work because, you know, they've got deals on TNT. They've got a deal on TBS. You know, they've got old WWF talent that, you know, people really want to see. They're getting, you know, they're doing cross promotional stuff just like WCW did. They're pulling in New Japan's guys.
Yeah.
Just like WCW did. And maybe they're like, you know, maybe they just got Chris Jericho in there going, okay, this is what actually killed the company, like from the inside, you know.
Chris Jericho.
Yeah. but yeah.
No, I agree. Even with Mercedes Moné, which is, oh gosh, I forgot her name.
Sasha Banks.
Sasha Banks from WWE.
If I could remember her name from The Mandalorian, I would have said that instead.
Even with her big premiere this last week on the show, it still kind of felt like, okay, great. You're here now.
I'm definitely not going to stay here though.
Right. It wasn't like this big deal like it felt before.
Oh, yeah.
Like when we had Daniel Bryan jump over, like that was a big deal.
Yeah.
When Jon Moxley jumped over, he was at the Double or Nothing pay-per-view right before the launch of the show, I believe. Wasn't it Double or Nothing?
I think it was Double or Nothing. Yeah, where he DDT'd I think it was Sean Spears.
Yeah, or something. Somebody.
Onto one of the poker chips.
Chip stacks.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel as big now. That doesn't mean that they can't return to form. WWE's clearly had several bad years over the last decade or more as well. And they're getting better.
Yeah, I mean, WWE has repackaged the Hurt Business as the Pride. You're telling me there's nobody that can compete with that? Grow up, bro. Grow up.
Grow up, bro. She came down in a bubble, Doug. Next week, Deidre will be back as we discuss one of the greatest animated Disney movies of all time that doesn't involve a princess. But until then, thank you, John, for joining me on the Nerd History Podcast.
Anytime, man.
Once again, I am Radio Matt.
And I'm John.
And remember, in the past, present, and future,
Jesus loves you, nerds.